Chapter 30. The air vibrated around Gorm as he rode across the muddy field toward the ruins of the Great South Gate. There was a rhythm to the sounds of the battlefield, a familiar drumming in harmony with the pounding of his own heart. He swung his axe in time to the song. It hummed through the air and rang out as he decapitated an unfortunate skeletal archer. A moment later, his horse smashed into the rearmost ranks of the undead army near the ruined gates of the city. Every stench that death had to offer assailed Gorm's nostrils in waves. The dry mustiness of a crypt, the nauseating odor of decaying flesh, the faint burnt fragrance of spectral essence, undead troops pressed in close behind their own stink, surrounding the horses and clawing for the heroes atop them. Gorm chopped off reaching limbs and careless heads as he tried to maneuver his mount around the leering dead and Jin's indiscriminate blasts of sorcery. "Push on!" he hollered to the wizard. "Keep pushing until—" The first wave of the old dwarven kingdom's new army crashed into the undead, sending up a spray of ichor and spare parts. Dwarves pounded skeletons into dust with massive warhammers. Orcs and gnolls hacked at zombies with axes and cleavers. Goblins and gremlins scuttled underfoot, jabbing at rotting flesh with short spears, while slaw launched stones from their slings at a safe distance. Gorm was in the heart of the violence, and he reveled at the violence in his heart. At some point early on, he decided that fighting on horseback was too cumbersome and had dismounted. So unsaddled, he was a tempest of axe and shield, chopping and battering any undead that couldn't scramble out of his way. "Press on!" he shouted in tune with the rhythm. "Keep pushing 'em!" Caught off guard by the sudden assault, the undead ranks were beginning to fall apart, often in more than one sense of the word. The army of the Old Kingdom carved a path to the ruined gates. The undead on the other side of the outer wall weren't any more prepared for a sudden assault on their flanks, and the dwarves in Shadowkin ground them down as they pressed into the streets of the city. Gorm and Jin regrouped just inside the ruined wall, falling back from the front lines for a moment. "Any sign of the others?" Gorm asked the wizard. "No." Jin tried to calm his horse amid the rush of troops pouring into the city. "But they're expecting us to go after my father." The wizard pointed toward the upper tiers. Some massive chunk of stone had carved a deep scar across Andoran's base, a channel of torn-up streets and knocked-down buildings. At the end of the trail of destruction, the great stone projectile protruded from the wreckage of Fafnir's gate. And atop the ruined gatehouse, Gorm saw a tiny figure wreathed in purple flame.
"Well, it'd be a shame to let him down."
Gorm's lips pulled back from his teeth.
"Come on!"
The various neighborhoods and markets crowded up against Andoran's main gate had been a warren of winding streets and hidden alleys, but the channel cut by the undead's siege weapon made for a convenient thoroughfare up the middle of the base. Gorm and Jin made their way north, flanked by a couple squadrons of dwarves and Shadowkin. They encountered little resistance at first, but after a few blocks, Gorm could see ranks of zombies and skeletons forming up in the channel ahead.
"They're going to make a stand," shouted Jin. "If they want a second funeral, who are we to deny 'em?" said Gorm.
The vanguard of dwarves and orcs slammed into the zombies at the front of the undead formation, and at first the heroes of the Old Kingdom pressed forward with typical ferocity. Their progress slowed to a halt, however, as the crowd of skeletons behind the zombies began to rise up like a wave ready to crash over the fight.
"I think this is one of them skull-taker things," Gorm shouted at Jin.
Now it was clear that the bones weren't a crowd of skeletons at all, but instead one sinister construct. It rose to its full height with the jerking, stilted movements of a golem, but instead of wood or metal, it had been constructed entirely from an intricate lattice of bones and ribs. Each of its four arms ended in a long, scythe-like blade of fused bone. Its head was fashioned from a cluster of human and animal skulls, all of which chattered menacingly as the abomination stared down at the fighters below it.
"A what?" shouted Jin. "A skull-taker," shouted Gorm. "Remember? Your father had one at the Tower of Ashes. I told you Thane killed it."
Jin's brow furrowed. "I thought he called it a rib-taker, fleshmonger, corpse-thresher? Something garish like that." A bestial roar chorused from the monstrosity's collection of grotesque faces.
Who cares what it's bloody called? Snorted Gorm.
Jin snapped his fingers.
I'm sorry, it's going to drive me crazy. It's going to eat ye, that's what it'll do, roared the dwarf. What is it with ye wizards naming everything?
The great construct took a scything swing at the hero's front lines, sending orcs and dwarves crashing back. The zombies and more traditionally sized skeletons around its feet swarmed forward, pressing their newfound advantage. Slavering ghouls and howling specters emerged from the ruined buildings around them, springing the trap.
I know. Corpse Taker?
Jin tried to calm his panicking horse while rattling off possible names for the bony giant.
Flesh Reaper. No, that's it. A Bone Reaper. He called it a...
Oh. Gorm had given up on the taxonomy of the dead, instead opting to launch a preemptive strike on the Bone Reaper's knee. Years of professional monster slaying had taught the dwarf that the trick to fighting any giant creature was to get underfoot without getting caught under its feet. The berserker ducked under one of the abomination's giant claws and deflected another with the back of his shield in a quick maneuver that brought him to a point that was both beneath the great construct's ribcage and out of its reach. The Bone Reaper howled and tried to back up quickly, but Gorm was on the offensive now. He hacked at legs and ribs with reckless abandon, cracking joints and protruding bones with rapid punches from his shield. With a roar and a heave, Gorm launched himself through its weakening frame and into its torso. Tiny fingers of bone and old teeth clawed at his skin as he bounced around the inner chamber of the construct, but they only spurred him to lash out with more fury. With a final cry of triumph, Gorm chopped off an arm near its unnatural connection to the hellish torso, severed a piece of internal scaffolding, and used the creature's spine as a point of leverage to launch out of the Bone Reaper's chest cavity. A moment later, he landed next to Jin, covered in bone dust and wearing a grin that spread from ear to ear. Behind him, the Bone Reaper groaned and stumbled.
And that's how you do it.
I wish that was true, said Jin, nodding at something behind them. Gorm turned and watched as the stricken Bone Reaper scooped three wailing skeletons into the dwarf-sized hole in its chest. The joint bones and fingers that made up its innards quickly dismantled the undead troops and passed their various components throughout its wounded body. Broken bones were replaced, skeletal scaffolding was reinforced, and gaps were closed with cadaverous replacements. Moments later, the Bone Reaper stood back up again, three new skulls emerging amongst the chittering mass at the construct's center.
It just took their bones, said Gorm, as dwarves and shadowkin fell back into formation around them.
The name may lack subtlety, but it does convey the right idea. Jin took a step back as the creature gave an unholy howl, only to be drowned out moments later by another cry echoing through the burning city. There was a buzzing shriek, almost like the air itself was screaming, as a fusion of flame and metal roared through Gorm's field of vision. The bizarre contraption sent a scintillating stream of glass and metal into the ranks of the dead. An explosion of pale green smoke enveloped the Bone Reaper, followed by a more typically fiery explosion. A few skeletal soldiers near the front lines froze solid. A zombie transformed into an undead frog. A pair of undead bannermen were overcome by a suffusion of yellow. Despite all that, Gorm was more focused on the strange vehicle skidding to a halt on the far side of the makeshift thoroughfare.
Heraldin! He shouted.
The bard flashed Gorm a grin from astride the back of the iron sleigh he rode, but kept his hands on the mouth of a small velvet satchel. The bag vomited forth a steady shower of glass vials and small charms that exploded, ignited, froze, transformed, shrank, or otherwise afflicted whatever they broke on. Heraldin sprayed the magical knickknacks across the ranks of the undead with devastating effect. Gorm caught a glimpse of Gase leaping from behind the bard, a blade in each hand. The doppelganger hit the flanks of the panicked undead and quickly set about a weapons master's work with grim stoicism.
"Ho there, Ingerson!" shouted Boomer, waving from the pilot seat of the contraption. We got our jet steed working, and we thought you might need some Creative Destruction brand consumables. All of them, added Buster, who clung to the back of the jet steed.
I'm out, yelled Heraldin, holding the bag back. Buster darted forward, tapped two silvery objects together, and dropped them in. The bard closed the bag quickly, aimed again, and loosed another blast of wind and consumables.
"What is that thing?" Gorm shouted as the bard reloaded. "An extra-dimensional satchel, a set of wind chimes, and every other offensive consumable in our warehouse," said Buster.
"Most expensive weapon you'll ever see," laughed Boomer.
A chorus of screams rang out from the cloud of emerald and flame that had engulfed the Bone Reaper. The massive construct loomed up from the flames, its faces pocked and charred by the corrosive gas. Yet it still raised its scything arms and staggered forward for another attack. Its scythes made short work of the unfortunate dwarven soldier in front of Gorm. This renewed assault on the undead monstrosity was the final straw for Jin's horse. The elven steed reared to its full height as it turned to bolt, throwing the unfortunate wizard. The Omnomancer kicked up clouds of dust as he tumbled across the ground, coming to rest directly in front of the rather incensed Bone Reaper. It raised its monstrous arms and leapt for a final strike before Jin could right himself. And then Geist was there, a blur of shadow and steel. The weapons master caught the Bone Reaper's foremost arm and sliced it neatly in twain, his enchanted blade leaving a burning nub where a scythe had been. Whirling and striking, the doppelganger then leapt onto the monstrosity. Its many skulls squealed and shrieked as it reared back.
"Incoming!"
yelled Heraldon, swiveling the extra-dimensional bag at the cluster of skulls that served as the monster's head. Geist kicked away from the Bone Reaper just as a spray of glass vials caught it in all of its faces. It gave a horrible, garbled scream as its head shrunk and grew, petrified and melted, froze and caught fire. Waving its remaining limbs in agony, the construct lost its balance and pitched over backward into the pooled remnants and byproducts of the magical oils and potions. Cheers erupted from the army of the Old Kingdoms when the abomination fell, and they charged forward once more as the Bone Reaper's horrible screaming faded. Swirling clouds of colorful gas rose from the putrid pool as the magical byproduct dissolved, burned, transmuted, and otherwise broke down the pile of inert bones.
"You all right, lad?"
Gorm asked, helping Jin to his feet.
Jin nodded impatiently. "Yes, but you should be worried about—"
"Geist!"
cried Heraldon. The bard leapt from the jet steed and dashed to the spot where the weapons master crouched, still clutching his side. Gorm and Jin arrived just as Geist slumped over, a dark dampness spreading from his wounds.
"Sav!"
Heraldon yelled, propping the doppelganger up. "We need elixir! Now!" "Pull up his armor," said Jin, skidding into the dirt beside the stricken weapons master. Faint threads of solomancy danced around the fingers of his black-gloved hand. "I need to see the wound if I'm to treat it." The wizard reached over the stricken fighter's wound as Heraldon moved to unbuckle the armor, but Geist reached up with sudden determination and grabbed the wizard's gauntleted hand in his own fist.
"What are you doing?" Heraldon demanded. "Let the man weave a spell."
"I need this hand to heal you," Jin said, looking the weapons master in the eye. "I cannot weave water from my other arm."
Geist only returned the stare, squeezing Jin's gauntlet so hard the leather crumpled and buckled around his fist. Gorm thought it a marvel that the wizard didn't cry out. After a moment, the weapons master broke the gaze and stared up at Heraldon, laboring to take each breath.
"No, my friend," said Heraldon. "I see what you are thinking, and I'm saying no."
Geist stared at him, unblinking.
"I won't!" shouted the bard. "It's senseless! I don't care how perfect the moment is!"
"What are they arguing about?" Gorm asked Jin.
"Are they arguing?" the wizard asked. "Is that what this is?"
"Fine!"
the bard hissed through clenched teeth. He turned to Jin and Gorm and spoke in the measured cadence of a messenger who loathes the message. "You two need to go on." Jin shook his head.
"But I can—"
"You can't waste magic and time healing." Heraldon's face was set in determination. "We came and fought and bled so that you could confront your father. All that matters is that you reach Tatar, Jin. That is what is most important."
Geist nodded.
Gorm shook his head.
"But all that matters," Heraldon repeated loudly, "is that you reach the Lich. But if you and Gorm can make it on your own, you can go the rest of the way without me. Then I can get our friend here back to the healer's tent and see to his wounds. Can you reach the Lich without me?"
Geist reached up with his bloody gauntlet and grabbed weakly at the bard's wrist. Haraldin ignored the doppelganger's protest.
Can you make it? He said again.
Gorm took a deep breath. Amid the chaos of the battlefield, a tiny fire flickered a little brighter at his core.
Aye, he said. I can get him there.
Good. The bard grabbed the weapons master's arm and slung it over his shoulder.
You see, my friend? They will be fine. Let's get you back to the healer's tent.
Geist didn't look happy with the decision, but he didn't look strong enough to offer much in the way of protest either.
Stop pouting, said the bard. It was a valiant stand. It doesn't have to be your last one.
Come on, Jin.
Gorm put his hand on the wizard's shoulder.
Let's go.
Yes, hurry, said Haraldin, helping Geist to his feet. And kill a few extra of those ugly rotters for us, will you?
Well, that's hurtful, said the skeleton with a club. We prefer the term differently existing, said the skeleton with a spear, with more than a little reproach in her hollow voice.
Feister Herc tried to back farther up, but a wall was behind her, and the pair of skeletons in front of her blocked the only exit from the small alleyway. She clutched Little Rex closer and bared her fangs.
I don't see much difference, undead monsters, she snarled.
You'll get it soon enough, said the spear wielder.
Her partner raised his club.
Once you've walked a mile in our shoes,
metaphorically. The ill-fitting metaphor, however, was the last sentence the skeleton ever spoke. The undead stopped in place, weapons raised, frozen like the bizarre experiment of a mad taxidermist. Aubryn and Mrs. Herc exchanged a quizzical glance before violent tremors overtook the bony assailants, flinging ribs and bones in all directions. Within moments, whatever dark force animated the corpses had left them, and they collapsed into a pile. As Mrs. Herc watched, two orbs of crimson light rose from the inert skulls and retreated back into the waiting hand of a dark figure hobbling down the alley. He was doubled over from the weight of the chainmail he wore over his midnight robes, and a silver beard spilled out from the base of his dark skull-faced helmet. In one hand he dragged a brutal-looking cudgel, and the two red lights swirled about his other like drunken fireflies.
Two more!
The dark warrior laughed, watching intently as the wisps in his hand winked out.
Two more for the master. And here, three more!
He turned his horrible gaze on Mrs. Herc and Aubryn. Feista held Little Rex closer and cowered back against Aubryn's legs. The warrior's scrutiny lasted only for a moment.
Nope, not time. Yet.
The dark warrior added the last word with a small laugh and retreated out of the alleyway.
Was that a priest?
Aubryn asked.
It was a lucky break, that's what it was, said Mrs. Herc, checking on her son.
Aubryn stared after the armored figure.
It's just that he had robes and a holy symbol, but I've never seen a priest of Mordor Og do that sort of thing.
And we likely won't see it again, so let's get out of here before more undead come. Let's go,
barked Feista. They dodged packs of zombies and the odd ghoul as they ran, taking shelter under awnings to avoid the notice of low-flying ghosts. They finally found their way to Meissen Avenue, then made it to the edge of Sculpin Down, moving toward the old gate that led to the third tier. They were halfway across the tier when they saw a group of humans and gnomes running toward them, back toward the base.
No! Hey, make for the upper tier!
Hollered Feista, pointing back over the approaching mob's heads.
Run!
Shouted an oncoming human.
Zombie bankers!
Screamed a gnome. Feista's heart leapt. Behind the oncoming mob, a grotesque ursine form rose up and let out a gurgling roar. She recognized the risen corpse of Mr. Stern, frozen forever in his werebear form. On either side of him, a pair of undead naga moved in a strange, shambling slither. The Lamia sisters, no doubt. They were surrounded by a pack of zombies in fine suits, the broken remains of the clerks and accountants who had gone over the wall.
That's right! Zombie bankers!
A flaming skull floated along beside the ghastly businessmen, howling like a hellish carnival barker.
Which is more terrifying, their eternal hunger for the flesh of the living, or their reckless fiscal irresponsibility? No, seriously, your input is valuable.
Go!
Mrs. Herc yelled to Aubryn, joining the fleeing crowd. Rex shifted and moaned in her arms. They ran back toward the gate down to the base, where they stopped short. Another mob of zombies and ghouls shambled toward them on the second tier, led by a skeletal warrior in black, warped armor.
"Go back!" shrieked Auburn. "We can't!" shouted a desperate Tinderkin from the rear.
Behind them, Feisty could see the crowd of zombie bankers lurching down the road. She felt panic rising as she searched for some escape, but the nearby alleys and side streets were blocked by rubble and debris. Between the two groups of approaching undead, there was nothing but stone walls and a cluster of terrified civilians.
"Mrs. Furk,"
said Auburn, taking her paw.
"I know, child."
The gnoll gave the girl's hand a long squeeze.
"They're right behind us." Jin looked over his shoulder as he and Gorm ran up the dirt path recently plowed up the base. He couldn't see much in the ash-choked streets, but he didn't like what he saw. There were too many bodies in his field of vision, and too many of them were ambulatory, and way too many of them had broken away from fighting with the Shadowkin and dwarves to give chase.
"All that matters is that you reach the lich,"
breathed Gorm, pumping his stout legs to keep pace. The dwarf banged his axe on his shield as if to emphasize the point.
"Well, yes," breathed Jin. "That's why I'm concerned about the... Arg!"
A halfling-turned ghoul leapt from the gutters of a ruined building, claws outstretched and maw dripping green ooze. Jin didn't have time to weave a spell. Yet he didn't need to. Calmly, almost lazily, Gorm dismembered the airborne undead with a few strokes of his axe. The dwarf didn't even seem to break stride. One moment he was on Jin's left, and the next he was on the right, banging his axe on his shield as ghastly bits rained down around them.
"Thanks," said Jin.
"All that matters is that you reach the lich."
"So you've said."
Jin cast a sidelong glance at the dwarf. "Look, we're almost there." Now that they were approaching Fafnir's gate, Jin could begin to grasp the magnitude of the stone that had shattered Andoran's gates. Even lying on its side, the pillar was taller than the gatehouse of Fafnir's gate had been before it was reduced to the scattered rubble before him. Great grooves were carved into the stone, a huge design that covered the entirety of the projectile. The wizard recognized several runes of noctomancy amid the patterns, though they were on a much larger scale than he had ever encountered before. A groan from behind them drew Jin's attention away from the massive runes. Dark figures were shambling from the haze around them.
"The undead are almost upon us. Why are you laughing?"
Jin looked irritably at the dwarf.
All that matters. All that matters,"
cackled Gorm, his eyes wide and his teeth flashing amidst the tangle of his beard. It occurred to Jin that the banging of the dwarf's axe on his shield had adopted a particular rhythm, while the tenor of his voice had lost a certain presence. Veins stood out on Gorm's arms and forehead, and his skin had become almost as red as the fiery beard from which he had once derived his professional name.
"This is that berserk, pyrebeard thing you do, isn't it?"
said Jin. Yet Gorm was only listening to a singular refrain from somewhere deep within.
"All that matters is that you reach the lich,"
he shouted, and then he was gone. Jin blinked at the cloud of dust where the berserker had stood. The screams of nearby zombies snapped his attention back to the present, but by the time he looked up, the nearest undead were already re-dead. Somewhere in the gloom beyond the slumping corpses, more zombies and ghouls shrieked in terror amidst the horrible rattling laugh of Gorm unleashed.
"Yes, well, it also matters that we defeat the lich," Jin shouted after the dwarf.
The mad cackling was growing more distant. Ghosts and specters floated high overhead.
I'll get started myself then, said Jin.
Fear and self-loathing welled up inside him as he looked at the heights above, where his father flew in the height of his power. Staring at the flashes of necromantic magic crackling through the purple haze, all of his planning and preparation seemed woefully inadequate. It took the entirety of his will to cram the swirling terror and doubt into a tiny box and stuff it in the back corner of his mind. With a deep breath and trembling hands, Jin began to climb. Katha exhaled and steadied her hands. She kept her eyes on the blaze in front of her, burning like a pyre in the middle of the ruined outer wall. Laruna grunted from the ramparts behind the elf. Do you think we got... Lady Caribe burst from the flames with an inhuman wail, flying toward the two heroes with claws outstretched. Katha caught the flash of her eye and fired. There wasn't time for another chance. The vampire veered to dodge the incoming projectile, and a subsequent blast of fire from Laruna drove the creature below the ramparts.
Do you think we got her?
Laruna asked again, stepping back to back with the ranger.
No.
Katha notched another arrow, watching the ghastly forms circling above them. Ghouls and specters had swarmed to the fight, and vampires lurked among the glowing souls like sharks amid a school of fish.
The thralls are still alive. Or moving. Whatever.
I get it, muttered Laruna. So they'll all die when we kill her?
Yeah, but it'll work faster if we do it the other way around,
said Katha softly. She loosed the arrow, but it fell well short of the vampire she'd aimed at.
Everyone we kill makes her a little weaker. If we kill enough, she can't keep those defenses up.
We have to kill them all?
Laruna whispered incredulously.
No, just enough to get her guard down.
Katha fired another arrow. It fell out of the air long before it reached a thrall.
If we can get her to make a mistake when she's weakened, I can land a shot.
But she has 1,000 of them!
Hissed the Solomancer.
We've taken out, what, 10? Maybe a dozen? We could have hundreds to go.
She doesn't have 1,000 thralls, said Katha dismissively. One of the vampires, lured into overconfidence by the short shots, drifted a little closer to the pair of heroes. Katha notched an arrow and blasted it to oblivion.
And now she's got one less, added the ranger.
Laruna shook her head.
1,000. That's what she said.
That's creative exaggeration, said Katha.
You know, building a brand. Remember Lorgrim the Devourer of Skulls? A nasty old warlord, no doubt, but he started every morning with a bowl of oat bran and went the whole of every day without having a single bone in his diet. It was just image.
Yeah, but that's a title, countered Laruna. She loosed a ball of fire that incinerated a ghost swooping in for an attack.
1,000 thralls is a specific claim. You have to back those up.
She's a villain. She's not going to go to court for false advertising.
Katha watched as the remaining thralls scattered and dropped down into the shadows.
Besides, mistress of a couple dozen thralls doesn't exactly sound impressive.
Well, however many there are, they're plotting something. Laruna shifted her weight.
Yeah,
agreed Katha. She scanned the ramparts, watching for the next attack. They didn't have to wait long. At the far end of the ramparts, several dark figures swirled into a cloudy mass and rushed toward the heroes in a sudden charge.
They're protecting her,
Katha said, picking off a thrall. She downed another quickly, and a third, but the shadowy ball was approaching faster than she could fire. Laruna added her own flames to the assault. The vampires slowed and wavered under the women's onslaught.
It's working, Laruna shouted. Careful,
Katha warned her.
Vampires are really...
The elf was mid-sentence when Lady Caribe leapt up from beneath the ramparts directly next to the elf and mage.
Clever,
Katha gasped. The moment lasted a tiny eternity. Katha watched the vampire's fangs flash in a triumphant grin as her ruse brought her to the hero's flank. The elf swiveled her bow, but it was slow, far too slow to hit the mark. Laruna was turning too, but she couldn't weave fast enough, and Lady Caribe was already diving forward, claws ready for the kill. Then a rock hit her. It was the sort of large block of rough granite used in laying foundations, unremarkable save for its trajectory. It caught the vampire in the side, snapping bones and twisting wings. Lady Caribe gave a pained squeal and took a moment to find her bearings. A moment was all Katha and Laruna needed. Three arrows and an incinerating beam of fire and light slammed into the dazed vampiress in quick succession. As her ashes drifted down toward the street, the surrounding thralls began to disintegrate with horrid wails. Katha wasn't paying them any mind. She ran to the edge of the ramparts, staring at the muddy, trampled earth outside the outer walls. Her eyes scanned every pile of stones, searching for some sign of life.
Hello?
She yelled, straining to raise her voice above the death cries of the fading thralls.
Thane, are you there?
But now another scream was drowning the ranger out, a high-pitched whine cutting through the air. On the edge of her hearing, she could make out Haraldin shouting and Laruna hollering back. Caitha remained focused on the stones just on the other side of the outer wall. A hand gripped her shoulder. "Caitha," Laruna said, "come on, we need to go." "It was him." The elf shook her head. "Thane's out there. He threw the rock." "Caitha, look." The Solomancer pointed up. High above them, a specter flew over the edge of the wall, dislodging one of the stones from its ramparts. The brick soared out across the road and demolished, with fated accuracy, an abandoned fruit cart.
"No," Caitha shook her head. "No, the rock that hit the vampire wasn't falling. I thought it came from... I don't think it was falling."
"Maybe," said Laruna. "I don't know. I was looking at the vampire. But I do know that Haraldin is down below, and Geist is wounded, and Jin has gone on to fight his father."
"But Gorm's with him," said Caitha.
"Haraldin thinks he's gone berserk," said Laruna, "so he may be with the wizard."
Somewhere in the distance, a mad cackling echoed above the fray.
"But maybe not," said Laruna.
Caitha's breath caught in her throat.
"So Jin is fighting the lich alone?"
"You cannot be serious," Datar Ermion sighed as he held his flaming face in the palm of his skeletal hand. I am, father, Jin said to the lich's back. The wizard struggled to clamber from the ruins of Fafnir's gate onto the top of the huge stone that had ruined it. I've come to stop you.
"Of course you have," said Datar, looking at the sky. "It's practically a guarantee that you'll show up to interfere with any plan I have. Why should my greatest triumph be any different?"
The lich waved a hand at the crumpled form of Johann the Mighty on the corner of the spire. The King of Andoran was unrecognizable save for the bits and pieces of his distinctive armor still hanging from his battered frame. Barbed hooks of shadow protruded from every inch of his skin, drawing up great swollen purplish-black welts and pustules wherever they touched. He used his sword like a crutch as he kneeled, breathing heavily. Two bloodshot eyes watched Datar warily from the mass of black boils that had once been his face. Jin struggled to find his voice.
You've committed crimes against all the people of Arth.
You have no idea what I've done, what you're interfering with. You're just cluelessly... What are you doing? The lich finally turned to face his son, and his snarl became a surprised shriek. How dare you sully the Ermion name with an omnimancer's robes? Jin's heart fell into his stomach. The inner defenses he'd spent decades fostering melted at the sound of his father's voice. Embarrassment and fear welled up within him. His mouth was dry and wouldn't form words.
You what?
Said the lich, his voice laden with exasperation. You've managed to somehow find your way back to Andoran, make your way past my army, climb atop the dark spire of Nephon, and now you can't even form a simple sentence to explain this? Datar waved at the offending robes again.
You...
Datar made a sighing noise again. Why is it that the only thing you're good at is ruining... The lich was interrupted by a scraping, clanging noise. Father and son turned to see Johann drop from the spire and scuttle off into the shadows.
Oh, for the gods' sake!
Datar turned back to Jin. Now look what you've done. It will take hours to track him down. Longer still to get him in that state again. Jin grit his teeth and shook his head. It was like every box had fallen from the shelves in his mind, and the swirling memories and emotions threatened to overwhelm him. Visions of his childhood kept bubbling into consciousness whenever he tried to speak.
First you ruin my plans at the Ashen Tower, then I have to miss my victory at Highwatch dealing with you, and now you've ruined my plans here, and that's not even the worst of it. An omnimancer. Honestly.
The lich fumed to himself. It usually goes without saying, but I am very disappointed in you, Jin. Some part of Jin screamed that he should be weaving, but the rest of him was sliding down well-worn grooves in the depths of his mind, slumping back into old habits and patterns at rock bottom.
I know. Still, I blame myself. I've probably done something to deserve you.
The flame surrounding Datara's skull flared a little brighter.
One way or another, son, I'll get you back in line.
The lich waved the wormwood staff, sending crackling bolts of black lightning at his son. Jin's drive for self-preservation momentarily seized control, and he instinctively raised a ward against the incoming spell. A spell woven in haste, however, was no match for the full power of a master of undeath. The dark magic forced its way through Jin's defenses and found its mark.